All right, guys, I think we'll go ahead and call our meeting to order since we've got a quorum and we've got all our guests are here. So I want to thank everyone for their attendance on a rainy Thursday, including our guests. We really appreciate your time, and I look forward to a very informative meeting with lots of rich discussion, hopefully, after we hear from the presenters. Does anyone have any issues with the agenda that Rachel sent out just a few days ago, a week ago or so? So let's see. Motion to approve. Do we need a motion to approve the agendas before we start?
I saw
that. All right. I hear a second.
I second it.
All right. Thank you. And has anyone had an opportunity to listen to the recording from the prior meeting in August? I understand there were some issues with the ability to hear what folks were saying.
That's why we started doing the summaries.
Right.
Lesser.
Right.
Because you just couldn't hear the documents.
Right, right. And so I think just in the effort to make those as clear and as informative for as possible for not only us, but anybody who wants to check them out, just if you're sitting at the edge of the table like Pam is, you know, lean in or just speak a little louder than conversation tone. This is a big enough room so no one's going to feel like you're yelling at them. So can I get a motion to approve the recording from the prior meeting?
Motion to approve.
All right, thank you, sir. In a second, we can get going with our new business, our old business and new business for today.
Second.
All right, thank you. So our welcome. We have a new EAC member, Chris Gross. So Chris, thanks for being with us. We're a pretty easygoing crew, so if you have any questions, there's no such thing as a dumb question, so anything is fair game. And just to back up, in our last meeting, we did do a consensus meeting where we talked about things that were of interest to us in the realm of environmental issues, initiatives for the county. And we settled on two. Our primary focus was water conservation, and the other was green infrastructure, which might be greenways, blueways, also usage of different areas, be it those for parks and rec, other things like that. So this meeting today, we're going to focus on the folks we've invited to join us in the area of water and conservation. So as you can see in your agenda there, we have a number of folks who are joining us to give us a sense of what their expertise is in the realm of water and conservation in the county, and hopefully shed some light on any areas that maybe they see opportunities. So they're going to give us a 5 to 7 minute presentation. They'll sit over there by Kim. And at the end of their presentation, we'll be able to ask questions. Again, I think this is a great opportunity to kind of to peer over their shoulder and see what they're seeing. And we always want to make sure that we are helping the county's staff programs and the other related areas like the city and other community organizations, not stepping on any toes. So I think this is a really good opportunity to see what's going on and maybe ways we might help as the EAC members. So. Without further ado, I want to invite Natalie to come up and speak to us about her experience with stormwater and erosion control in the county.
Hi. I was not real sure what to prepare, so I may be off the mark some. You can let me know. What I first put together was what the ordinances say for stormwater. I actually broadened what I did. You had on here for stormwater and erosion control, but I actually do watershed and floodplain too, which does impact water quality. So I went ahead and brought those as well. And that way, if you had any questions, I could answer them. So I did these little 1 to 2 page outlines for stormwater. Let's see, 1, 2, 3. four. You'll pass one down.
Thank you, ma'am.
This is mine?
Yeah.
Thanks.
This one's been rude right here.
Okay.
Each one's on a different program.
All right.
Thank you. The highlights of the program. I'm trying not to bombard you with dribble.
Can we help you pass these out? Do you have something?
Yeah, let's see. Let's see.
Okay, there's a purpose of why I spread it out and did watershed and floodplain, because stormwater doesn't cover the whole county. So that's one reason I wanted to share with you that ordinance. Let me have this on, then we'll get started.
Okay.
Typically just deal with development in the county and some of the municipalities. And when a developer comes in to do new development or redevelopment, they come to see me to get a permit to be able to do erosion and stormwater. So erosion control is probably the best one to start with. We start there. And what I did is I tried to tell you what's different about our programs from the state. So the state program is identical to ours, with the exception of the things I put on this list. At the state level, it's an acre or more land disturbance for you to get a permit. On ours, it's the same, an acre or more, unless you have some steep slope issues. And that's under the first part where it says steep slopes. You know, if you have a half acre or more that has 16% to 25% slopes, you need to get an engineered plan and get a permit. That way we can keep from having landslides when they're building houses. If you have a quarter acre, it drops to 25% or more slope. That way we're trying to watch those areas where they're building houses on the side of mountains. So that's what that's protection for. I also put in here exclusions for the program. This is the same as the state, but a lot of people do not understand that we do not take care of agriculture properties or forestry properties. So I thought that would be good information for you.
That goes directly to the state then?
Well, the forestry does, and I'll explain that a little bit more, but on agriculture, the state does not regulate it either. Neither one of us do.
It'd be the farmers.
Yes, that they have their own regulation, and I'm not sure who it is. I guess it's the Department of Agriculture. Yeah. But it's...
Because I know a farmer out in Mills River got into trouble because of...
Right.
Runoff.
But that's... it's yeah, it's a different agency than Dean or us at local programs. So a lot of people will call us about farms and then get upset when we can't help them. Hmm. So it's just good information to know that this is something we're not allowed to help with. Now in forestry, how that works is if they're doing forestry out on a site, cutting the trees down, and I mean cutting them down and selling the logs, not just cutting a tree down, that goes to a logging program, which is the forestry service. And the forestry service goes out, and they don't issue a permit, but they get with the logger, they give them their best management practice manual, and they have to follow a plan. They actually have to do a plan and give it to the forester, and they watch the program. But they don't have a permit, per se. They just have to do that. But if they fail to follow the program, it drops back into erosion control, but not to the local program. It drops back into the state program.
Even for personal property?
Yeah.
Was this set in effect at the time they did that? What was the name of the place that had all the erosion?
Seven Falls. Thank you. Yeah, now Seven Falls was part under the state when it started, and then we took over the program in 2007, so we started doing part of it at that time. And then he went foreclosed upon, and then it got into a legal battle, and we weren't allowed to go on the property because it was in a legal battle. And then once we took over to do anything with the property, we couldn't see over our own project, so the state took over again. So that's how that one worked. So now the state deaner office is over that project, and Henderson County has hired contractors to take care of the erosion. So if there's anything going on out there, the state's actually the enforcement against our contractor. Does that make sense?
I think so.
Yeah. It's very confusing.
What I'm seeing in my mind is when we're in, it's not paintball, laser. I'm seeing all these.
That's why I was trying to make it, you know, just bullet point to try to not make it too...
Yeah.
Exactly. There is a lot of layers, and I was trying not to get so detailed that I wound up giving you the ordinance. I'm trying to give you just the highlights to where hopefully I'm answering the questions you want to know. So it's an acre or more unless you're doing steep slopes, and then agriculture's exempt, and that's agritourism too. So like if they're selling, you know, dairy products and stuff, that's considered agriculture. And then forestry, if they fail to do the forestry plan, it kicks back to Deaner's erosion control program. And then they take over and do enforcement against them like it's a regular erosion control site. So, is there any questions on this one as to what we do? And the towns, I put at the top the towns that Henderson County enforces for. It's Henderson County Unincorporated Area, the City of Hendersonville, the Town of Fletcher, the Town of Laurel Park, and Village of Flat Rock. So basically, we just don't go into the Town of Mills River. The state does the Town of Mills River. So if you're in the Town of Mills River's town limits, we do not have jurisdiction. It goes to the state level for you to have any jurisdiction. So if you see something going on within the town limits, like erosion, you have to call the state to get anyone to come out and look at it, because they chose to stay with the state program.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Do you want us to wait until you're in?
No, you go ahead.
So erosion control plan is required if someone is planning to disturb an acre or more. I'll just simplify and say that. But what is, so if someone has an issue and there's sediment in the stream and they haven't disturbed an acre, what is the recourse?
You're still required by law to keep erosion on your own property. so that it doesn't keep us from coming out and telling you that you're in violation of the law. You just don't have to have an engineered plan. So you still can pay fines and do what you have to do. You just don't have to have an engineered plan or a permit.
Are the fines be based on just the cleanup?
Well, we typically don't fine anyone unless they ignore us. If we go out and they take care of what we say, we don't fine them because we would rather they use that money and fix the problem, not just give us the money and then can't fix the problem. You know, so our goal is the clean water.
It's the same way that you would give someone a violation for being in violation of a plan that is recorded.
Mm-hmm.
Knows a violation, fix it, or recourse.
Yes, correct.
Another dumb question.
There's no
I didn't preface my own.
There's no dumb questions. This is very complicated. So.
You've got an acre of land, but you're only planning to disturb a quarter acre of land.
Correct. No.
It's
the land disturbance. That's correct. And then when you're doing steep slopes, to give you the answer to this question that you're probably thinking about, if you're on steep slopes, it's only what you're disturbing on that steep slope. So if you've got a 25% steep slope and you've got a small area over here that's flat, you don't have to get a permit because you're over here on the flat part of it.
That was an important question.
Yeah, so I answered it. So is everybody good on erosion? And the next one is the stormwater, which how the county is on the stormwater. If a lot of you are used to city limits and city towns, you have the 6 minimum measures. So they have a lot more on stormwater. Counties typically only have one part that they have to do, which is post-construction runoff, because the counties do not own roads or anything. So we're not required to do all the other measures on phase two. So that's why we're just doing the one measure, which is the post-construction runoff. And that's basically if you develop in Henderson County, you have to have a permit if you disturb more than an acre of land. That's what kicks whether you need the stormwater permit or not. If you look down about midway on this sheet of paper, specific requirements, it tells you when you need a plan. It talks about development and redevelopment that cumulatively disturb more than 1 acre and is not part of a common larger common plan of development or sale. And then development and redevelopment that disturb less than 1 acre and such activities that are part of a larger common plan of development, even though multiple separate distinct activities take place at different times on different schedules. Or the third one's any activity not exempt from permit requirements of Section 404 of the Federal Clean Water Act, basically ongoing agriculture or forestry. That's what they're talking about there. To explain the larger common plan of development, this gets a little confusing, and we've had some issues lately with this, so I'm going to write a new policy here shortly when I have, you know, a few minutes of my time. But we're going ahead to enforce it now. So if somebody comes in, we're enforcing it like it's written already. But it's what it is a larger common plan of development. It's like, take Walmart, for example. You've got a couple of out parcels that may not be developed yet. You've got like, say, Jack in the Box is not there. It's just a flat piece of property still. That would be a larger common plan of development because that was developed as one big shopping center with several out parcels, you know, to be developed later. So then they would be required to do stormwater unless it was done all as one big large plan that Walmart took into account when they did theirs, like they were choosing to go ahead and assume a size of a building with parking and everything.
Mm-hmm. Is there an advantage to doing a long-term plan and how long do the plans run and you have to resubmit if it's 20 years later?
Well, you get into this planning versus stormwater. Like if you're getting a planning approval, you can submit it as a complete development plan. And when you do that, you're grandfathered in to how the regulations are at that time. But if you just turn in phase one to the planning department and get approval, then phase two and three are not grandfathered. So if your regulations change, yes. So that's how that kind of works. And that's for stormwater and erosion anyway. I'm not sure about all the regulations. They may not get grandfathered, some of the other ones, but stormwater, erosion, floodplain, some of them, they would get grandfathered.
If you have your permit in other areas and
building
change and your permit's still valid, then you're still going under the existing.
You still stay under the existing. But that way, if the code changes, you're basically, you can, I guess, apply for having substantial work done. You know, they got two or three ways you can do that. So there's different ways to get put under one set of rules. I've put at the bottom this paragraph right here, tells you the three things that your stormwater plan has to meet for water quality. And that's the reason I put it on there, is that is the three things everybody has to meet. And it's, let's see, the measure should control and treat stormwater runoff for the first inch over a 24-hour period. And the runoff volume drawdown has to be between 48 hours and 120 hours. It can't be any less than 48 or no more than 120 for the water to go down. And then it has to treat 85% TSS removal, which you know is total suspended solids. And then they have to use the state, North Carolina State, best management practice manual. If they don't use it, then the engineer has to fill out he has to basically say that he knows for a fact that that device will do the 85% suspended solids, or the programs should not be accepting it. Otherwise, you're not getting your 85% like you're supposed to be. So. You do have low-density projects. I put right below that. And that's basically if you're under 24% impervious surface on your property, you can use vegetative conveyances and not have any concrete type.
That would be ditch or grass in it?
Yes. And that's what you really want everybody to be using. You don't want all these concrete devices. So that's basically what... the stormwater program is all about, and it is identical to the state. We have made no changes to it, so it's exactly like the state model is. And we do Henderson County, Town of Fletcher, and Town of We do Henderson County unincorporated area and Village of Flat Rock under the Henderson County Stormwater Ordinance. We also enforce Town of Fletcher and Town of Laurel Park under their individual ordinance. So we basically take their ordinance and apply it to their towns. So, and I wrote that on here as well, towards the bottom. They're stricter,
more
yes.
Strict, yes.
Yes. We chose not to do that. We chose to be the same just so that it would be less confusing. Like if you're in the town of Mills River and you're not in the watershed, you go to the state to get your permit. You don't want to be going there with different regulations, then come to Henderson County and have different regulations, then going over here. We're trying to make it better on the engineers not to have to say, where am I? So trying to make it more consistent. At least that's a better way to try to be anyway. Now I wanted to explain the watershed. That's the two-page one with the tables on the front. This is the interesting thing. A lot of people don't understand that there's actually a water supply watershed and a stormwater ordinance. They're two different things. Mills River is probably 50% watershed. You have some unincorporated area out that's not in a watershed. But all around downtown Mills River, where 280 and 191 come together, is all watershed. And then when you head back out 280 to Brevard, a lot of that's watershed. And if you come back 191 all the way to West Henderson, that's all watershed. So you've got a lot of watershed. So if you're building in that area, you have to apply a watershed permit to your development, like it's the stormwater, basically. So instead of getting a stormwater permit, you get a watershed permit. And it has different criteria on what you have to do. So instead of it being 24% is low density, and over 24% is high density, and you basically, in stormwater, you can put 100% pavement down on your ground as long as you treat it. So watershed, you can't do that. Watershed's got it limited to where if you're in a certain watershed, you can only have so much impervious pavement. So your table here, you have all the watersheds listed. So let's look at WS3BW. It basically says if a residence under average lot size, you have to have 20,000 square feet to build a house.
Of land.
So if you had 4 acres, you could build almost 8 houses on that land.
If a farmer wanted to let those fields, 191 is a get underwater. I bet you they're underwater right now.
I'm sure they are.
if that farmer wanted to do a bunch of ditching, so if that would happen, or run off would be faster, where does that come under?
It doesn't really come under it because it's agriculture.
Okay.
As far as building part right here.
Well, he's probably in a floodplain.
Yeah, he's definitely in a floodplain, and that comes into the floodplain ordinance. That limits him doing some stuff. The floodplain ordinance does. But yeah, I've worked with them on some of the berms they put up to try to keep the water off the fields. But so now if you look, this first block is low density, where I was talking about the 20% on WS3BW. That's saying basically residential, you can build one house per every 20,000 square feet of property you have. And then on commercial, the maximum percent built upon area for low density would be 24% on that next column. And if you go over to the last two columns, you're in high density. And this is what watershed does for you. And it's good because it limits the amount of building and protects the water better. If you look at that same WS3BW, your maximum built upon area is 50%. So you can only put half the impervious surface that you could in stormwater. So the watershed is better protected. And that's the reason they really like to have a watershed versus a stormwater. And then the natural drainage and filtering bonus, they have that in the less critical watershed. That WS4 is the one furthest away from the intake, and it allows you to do some natural drainage, which is basically the vegetative swales and stuff. And if you do those, you get a little more credit, and they let you do just a little more, so you can go up to 70% on your property at that point. So, but that's when you're farthest away from the intake, which is like you're at West High instead of down at the Mills River or Prince Brown. So,
what's the BW?
Balance of watershed. And the CA is critical. Critical area. And the PA is protected area.
I've just never seen the BW.
Yeah. But other than that table in the front, this watershed is identical to stormwater. You got the same rules, same regulations. It's the 85%. It's the same drawdown time. It's the same manual. The only thing different is your impervious surface is less. So,
in an alley. So walk me through, like, a permit that was required for, say, building in the Mills River. That's next to the intake.
That one's a bad one to pick.
Okay.
Well, they started in 2004 on that project. And they got a special intensity allocation permit, which was a whole different animal. And they don't have those anymore.
Is that like a variance to the work of this?
More or less. What they did is they have a like a pot of a pot of something. They had a pot of I'm trying to think of how you would go about it. It's like square footage of the watershed. And they put it out here and they said, okay, first come, first serve. Whoever comes to get it first.
Where's that pot come from? Is there conservation easements over some that they know will never get developed?
They used to allow a certain amount of high density development in the watersheds back then. And that project went out. I worked on that.
Yeah. They actually still allow that. It's just we went away from it and went to being more strict because that was really too loose. We wanted to be more stricter on it so that we could protect the water. Back
so
then,
Harris Teeter can't build in Mills River.
No, they can build. It's just they've got to do water quality.
They have to buy three times the amount of land.
Yeah. What happened was Ingalls did their project. The ordinance read you could get into this pot if you ask for it first.
Mm-hmm.
So they did. But it also said for water quality, do the best you can. That was it. Yeah, that was it. Do the best you can. So they didn't have to do a whole lot. Well, now they have to do water quantity, water quality, and everything else. So, I mean, Harris Teeter can come in, and they can get 50%. They'd have to buy a little bit bigger parcel. They could still come in. They just have to do more. But here's the upside to Ingalls. They actually did water quality anyway.
They did it like it was under phase two.
Yeah. So they actually did do it anyway,
so
which was very good of them. So,
if you want permeable land, could they break that up into small patches, like make strips between the parking?
Well, they can. No, they can. It's just a balance between what planning wants you to do and what zoning wants you to do and what we want you to do. Like zoning will want some islands in between certain parking, but yeah.
But that could work to their advantage. I'm a tree hugger.
Yeah.
And any place you can plant trees, I'm for.
Well, I mean, they're good. They're actually good for water quality, too. I mean, you can get a bioretention and have some trees and different vegetation in it. And it's good for it. So.
It looks beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It can shade for your cars.
You can use permeable pavement. It's just we haven't had a lot of takers on that, but you're also in the mountains where you have freeze and thaw, and that ruins the permeable concrete stuff. If you use it, it tends to freeze and thaw and then start breaking down, and then after a couple of years, you've got asphalt. I mean, it's just plain old 95%. It's no longer, the water's no longer getting through it any. So. And I'm really ate up everybody else's time. So.
Okay. Yeah, this is lots of good information. I really appreciate you putting together all this for us. You went above and beyond, I would say, Natalie. So we're very appreciative of that.
No problem. I just wanted to make sure I covered everything I could.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that we kind of wrestled with at our last meeting is that everything you all do is predicated by ordinance. It's ordinance driven, and so.
Right.
It would be a disservice to us in the community if we just started flying off without looking at ordinances as well. So I'm really thankful.
Well, we have to be really careful too. We can't go around trying to bluff either.
Right, right.
Because the minute you do that, you lose your credibility.
That's right.
And then the ones that were listening don't listen.
That's right.
So you can't just go out and say, I'm going to fine you if you don't quit that. Because half of them know that you can't do it. So.
That's right.
There's no need to try to bluff.
Does anybody know, due to the monsoon we're having, we are no longer in flood smoke and water conservation?
You have to ask him.
We still in?
Yes.
It takes a while.
Where we feel like we're at a more sustainable level.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, it's voluntary right now, but.
Yes. So, question I have. So, we all, you're in here talking to us about basically what you do and enforce and oversee. We have the ability to take the commissioner's ear on things that they have control over, the ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, I know in my job, and I'm sure everyone else's, there's like things and rules you have to follow
mm-hmm.
that you know that you could fix if they would let you, whoever they is. In this instance, we could be on your team and ask the commissioners to change something.
Mm-hmm.
So what is that? Are there any of these
anything you need help out?
That come to mind that is on every project that comes up and you're
I'm
like, it's just written wrong. Say what?
I'm not at liberty to say.
Oh, about any assistance needed?
I don't. It's not really for me to say what's, you know, good.
Okay, let me ask it in a different way. We are citizens of Henderson County,
mm-hmm.
and we want to know what's broken with the ordinance. Can you, as someone that deals with it every day, tell us something that we could look into and see what is broken on our own, and then maybe make it.
I can do that.
Yeah.
I just don't have an opinion one way or the other.
Yeah, and maybe don't. It's not necessarily what's wrong, but what areas for improvement they are. Because I know everybody has to walk the line. It's like, okay, this is what I'm charged with.
Well,
and
that's
this is
but that's the benefit of
our
position. We can
right.
say it's wrong.
I understand.
And we can suggest an improvement.
I would suggest you talk to some other engineers and stuff that deal with the same ordinance or the other ordinances. It's just not my position to be able to.
Yeah.
I have to.
So your answer is that you like it how it is and you don't want it to change?
I didn't say that. I said I
no comment.
All right. You got my email.
No comment.
Right.
You have my phone number.
There you go. Yeah. We appreciate
and
your time.
You don't have my email. You have my phone number.
Thank
you for having me.
Yes,
thank
you.
I
that's okay. Seth, you want
to?
Okay. You're welcome
to be at the table or at the podium, whatever you prefer.
Look at everybody.
All right. Let me get my clock out here. So I'll try to keep on time. Well, I appreciate you having me. My name is Seth Swift. I am the Environmental Health Supervisor, not director. I wish I was a director, but I'm not quite there yet. But I'm.
Did I get it wrong on the meeting?
That's fine.
No, that's okay.
It happens all the time. I take it as a compliment.
There you go.
But I did want to say this. Actually, I've been with the county almost 20 years, and this is my first opportunity to speak to this board, so I'm grateful to have the opportunity. And I did want to give you a real quick overview of environmental health. We have probably the worst title of any organization in the state because environmental health means everything. When you hear that title, you should hear the phone calls I get on a daily basis. It ranges the litany. But I did want to talk a little bit about some of the things we do relate to water, but also with things that don't. I am in charge of on-site wastewater, septic systems, wells, food and lodging establishments. You see the gray cards on the restaurants. That's my department. We inspect summer camps, nursing homes, rest homes, swimming pools, tattoo parlors, lead. We do lead investigations on children with elevated blood lead levels. I'm in charge of the mosquito program during the summertime.
You're a good guy to know.
Yeah, so quite a bit of things. So I'm definitely out there, but it is a limited area with that title of environmental health. So I do want to stress that. Also, environmental health is under the health department. So I'm under the health director and the board of health. And that's going to be very important for some of the questions y'all just raised about helping with ordinances and regulations. Board of health, I'm not sure if you're familiar with, is a unique body that has some unique abilities for to regulate. And we're going to talk about those real briefly and some things that we have. So that being said, I think as a means of intro, tell you a bit about Henderson County and the well program, and that's the water wells, that's for drinking water and for irrigation, and there is a difference, and I'll talk about that briefly, but a couple of things just for background. In 1991, Henderson County was the first county west of Charlotte to implement a local well regulation. That means we did do inspections on wells. We were the first. Took quite a long time before the next county came. In 2008, we sunsetted that provision because the state required it. because then we had state rules. So in July of 2008, we started down that program. We were already experts at it. We've been doing it for a long time. But there was a lack in the new state rules that didn't regulate something called irrigation wells. You know what an irrigation well is? Sound like it ought to be simple.
What are they used to irrigate?
Grass, yes. That was left out of the state rules. So we had it in our local rules before. So we made a local regulation to put it back in. Do you know the difference between a water well and an irrigation well as far as how you drill them and what they look like?
Take more water?
Nothing. And we thought it was a disservice to the community because if you drilled a well and you got 80 gallons a minute and it was an irrigation well, you could never convert it to a drinking water well because you went from no man's land. We would never be able to do it. So we regulated them before, and they cost the same amount to drill. There's no difference in it. It's just it was all wrapped up. So we did do that through the Board of Health because a Board of Health regulation is countywide and municipality-wide. So whereas a regulation by the Board of Commissioners is only in the unincorporated areas of the county, and then you'd have to get to. So that is one unique thing about the Board of Health when you have that ability. But the Board of Health is also only given a very small amount of area that they can issue regulations. They just can't go out and issue any type of regulation. They have a limited area in which they can do that. But that also being said, I did want to kind of go over quickly what we do with wells, just to give you an idea. When you apply for a well permit with the health department, one of the things people ask me, will I get water? Now, if I could guarantee you that, I'd be a millionaire and I'd put Lee out of a job. Okay, over there. But we cannot. We can give you an area where we can try to get you a well that would have the least of best chance of not being contaminated by something. I use that reference. So we don't pick a spot. Normally we pick a big area and say, drill there. You don't want to drill through a septic tank. You don't want to drill beside a creek. You don't want to drill through an oil tank, right? That's just things you typically don't want to do. But we also, when we do that, we issue that permit. We go out and do the inspection, give a permit. We inspect the well as it's being drilled. It's called a grout inspection. And what we're doing is we're ensuring that the casing that goes into the ground to keep the well from collapsing on itself is sealed properly with a concrete, cement, or other type of approved product. And I liken it, probably a terrible example for nurses, but I like it to nurses. When you put a IV in you, a lot of times they'll put a Band-Aid over that. Why do they put a Band-Aid? Because they don't want something else going in around the outside of the needle. You know, if you're plumbers, if you've ever seen water can run on the outside of a pipe, just as good as it can run through the inside of the pipe. So you don't want to contaminate the groundwater with an improperly drilled well. So you want that grout to clog up so when it gets flooded, it doesn't go right down into the groundwater. And then also we inspect the well when it's completed and make sure that the wellhead has been finished properly. And then finally we actually take water samples. So one well permits a minimum of 4 visits. With one of my staff members. When we get water samples, I do want to stress the information is for information. You could have the most contaminated well. Now, this is private wells. We're not talking about a restaurant or something. But it could be the most contaminated well in the world, and I give you the information. Can I make you get rid of it? No. No, not really. It's kind of like your doctor telling you you don't need to eat any more salty food. Does your doctor follow you to the buffet line and say, don't do that? That's private. Once you do, the public part is the aquifer, but what you do with it is up to you. Most people do want to get corrected, I will say that, and that's something we try to help them with. So I did try to pull a couple of samples, I tried to pull a couple of information because we were talking about, I guess, a drought situation, and I did want to, I don't normally share this a lot, yeah. But and I will want to go ahead and say this, if you share it, that's fine, it's public record, but I do want to put a big asterisk on this. This is anecdotal information that I'm going to provide you with. This is not scientific, okay? And what do I mean by that? If I was going to give you a real number when it came to this, I would have to do it differently. But what I did was I came up with some numbers that I keep track of, because people say to me, what's the average depth of a well in Henderson County? Honestly, I don't know what the average depth of a well in Henderson County is because I'd have to know what the depths of all the wells in Henderson County and get you an average, right?
Yeah.
So what I do is every time we do these data retentions, I just collect some information to get a yearly idea of what's going on with new wells. And you heard that word, new. Not old wells. Not existing wells. New wells. So in 2014, if you look at that quickly, you'll see we had 99 new wells. The average depth was 364. I do put the median because anybody know why I use a median in this county? Why would I even want to do that? You're right, elevations. You drill on top of Pinnacle Mountain, I guarantee you're not going to get a 100-foot well. I'll guarantee you that. Okay? You drill down the bottom of Mills River, you're probably not going to get a 1,000-foot well. Okay, so we have a very diverse county with diverse geography that has a big impact on your wells. I know where the areas of this county that don't get much water. I can tell you where they are. And I know areas that tend to get more water. And I know places where you can go 10 foot and get no water and then get a lot of water. So it does happen. So I do try to use the medians to try to help take those outliers out to give you a little bit more better reflection. And then the average gallons per minute, you'll see that, and I just take it based on what the well drillers tell us on a new well. Okay, that does not mean that in 2 years there's less water or more water. This is not indicative of a drought situation, because you may look at that and the first thing you may say is, well, Seth, if you go across there, the average gallons per minute has gone down in the last 2 years, and the depth has gone up. It's where they're being drilled, okay, is the usage. It's hit or miss. I've got about 10, 11 years of this data. It's pretty good. I always tell people average depth overall, about 325 feet is what I tell people if you want to know an average. And I usually use the average of 8 gallons a minute based on years of data. Now, does that mean you should expect that? Oh, no. If you live on Pinnacle Mountain, probably not going to happen. If you live somewhere else, you may get a 100-foot well. We have got a well, we've drilled wells that are 1,100 feet deep and got half a gallon a minute. We've drilled wells that are 98 feet deep and got 150 gallons a minute. So, now, one thing I will ask this committee, just so you're aware, when you think of where water is stored in the ground, we use the word aquifer a lot. Do we have aquifers here?
Maybe. Underwater springs.
Yeah, underwater springs not an aquifer, though. Not necessarily by the definition.
Well, I know.
Yeah, there might be a cave or a void, but no, we don't. Not like down east. Down east, you have like, in essence, giant lakes underground that rise and fall. Here, our water, it actually comes from the fractures in the rocks. And so, when you drill a well, what you're doing is you're hoping to hit an area, because what happens is you drill through the soil, you get to the rock, and then they start to drill. And what they're really doing is the well is being recharged by the fractures and the water coming in through the fractures. And so, but there's not an aquifer. You're not tapping into a lake. So just, I didn't know if you knew that or not. I just thought I would share that with you, a little bit of piece of information.
Are all aquifers lakes? I thought sometimes they were porous material. Like
they could be. Yeah, I use the word lake. It could be a porous, sandy-like material. There's different definitions, but we definitely don't have that type of aquifer when you think of it. You're tapping on, yeah. And that's why we do see situations where you have two wells literally 10 foot apart, and one's a great producing well, and one is not. And that does happen. So that is kind of my rundown. Oh, I guess one other thing I will mention, we typically, in times of drought, which we've had up to just recently, we do see some wells that we sometimes call our wells that have conditions to them, i.e. they don't have much water to begin with. They may have an impact of this. Most people who have those wells usually are aware of it, and they know to conserve water, or they've got big storage tanks on them or something that they can try to keep those pumps from coming on. The last big drought we had, 2008, I think it was, a lot of people are on springs in this county, and most of the springs were impacted very quickly. Springs, in essence, are surface water. And so a lot of people have gotten off the springs over the years. We don't have that near as often as we used to. When I first came to work here, we had facilities on springs. Now that almost everybody's on wells now, or city water, thanks to Lee. I think city water is very good. I think that there's definitely a need for that in this county. But that's just some basic information. I can talk about any questions you got about wells or other things. I'm happy to answer it. Sure.
Would you be the person to ask about when we first moved here, I've forgotten who I talked to. I wanted a gray water system in the house we were building.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, no. We're just getting people so they are not emptying the toilet into the backyard. You know, don't mess with gray water. We're trying to...
There is a provision. Now, that's going into the on-site area. There is a provision in law for gray water systems. Strangely enough, we don't have a really good set of rules on the gray water. So when someone wants to do it, I usually have to refer them to Raleigh. I'm an employee of Henderson County, but I'm following state regulations. Okay, the rules I follow, other than that one well one for irrigation, everything I do is state regs.
So if I wanted to do it today, I probably could.
You probably could. I've talked to a lot of people who do it as far as manufacturers. I've had some interesting conversation. There is some expense to it. It is allowed by law. But it's in an area where I wish it was easier. I'm a big advocate for that. I think the less water going into the drain field is better for the drain field. I would say that 100%. But there is a little downside with that occasionally, and I will mention that sometimes with extreme use of recycling, what you're doing in some cases is you're making your sewage that goes into the septic tank in the drain field very, very strong. Because there's that old saying, dilution is the solution to pollution. But when you have it super, super strong, it can sometimes cause big problems for that drain field. So I know the state has, I think that's what they're trying to balance, because you can be very extreme. But I usually recommend to people that are even looking that way, one of the first things I tell people, you're building a house, you're buying a house, just get a low, start off with, get a low-flow washing machine. Yeah. That's your number one producer in your house, yeah. Bar none. An old one, yeah, an old one uses 60 gallons a minute per cycle. A new one can go as low as 22.5. And those are the front loaders, and I think they're great. And having those actually have helped septic systems, I think, that have been, you know, people that might have to have a repair, they can put in a low-flow washing machine, and that maybe prevents them from having that repaired on their septic system. So there's some things in its conservation. And those systems work great because there's still water in there that it doesn't cause the system to malfunction because you're making an increased potency sewage. Hopefully.
Yeah.
So,
we're getting cringy about rain.
But yes, but it is coming. It is really coming. I really think there's definitely some things that can happen with that.
Do you have to get a permit if you want to do a system to, like, take all your downspouts from the roof and put it into a
rain barrel?
And use that, that to water the lawn?
No.
Okay,
now, Lee will tell you, and I will tell you the same thing, especially with recycling, because y'all know this will make Lee shake, and it makes me shake. You can't connect that stuff to your city water tap or your well tap. There's got to be something separate about it. What I mean by that, if you want to recycle your toilet water and use it for something, there can't be a cross connection, to go to the toilet, like from your sink or something.
Oh,
it's got to be closed. It can't go back into your potable water supply. So that's one of the big things about this.
So you wanted to use the runoff from your washing machine to flush your toilet.
It would have to be a closed circuit. In other words, it goes from there to here, but it can't connect back with your – it has to be a separate line. In other words, a lot of times you think of – I like to think of colors. You got a blue line for cold water, a red line for hot water. You might have a green line for recycled water, and those never come into contact with one another. But that's the colors are mine. That's not this.
But it can go into the
sewage
system.
Oh, yeah, the sewage system. Yeah, but we're talking about the potable water side.
Okay.
That's where you don't want cross connections are the bane of anybody's existence, and they can really do a lot of damage very quickly because, one, they're hard to identify after the fact. We had a gentleman who was on city water about 15 years ago. He did a cross connection, and it somehow got gasoline into the city water system, but only went about a block. Never quite figured out how he did it, but he finally owned up to it. I could take you to the house. That's for your time. Maybe I could take you to the house. It caused quite a stir. So cross connections are a big no-no. I don't like them, and Lee doesn't like them. We don't like cross connections. That's one thing clear about recycling water. It's got to be its own connection. It cannot get back. And that's one thing people sometimes think, can I treat my water and then drink it? I don't see that happening anytime in the near future. California's talking about some of that, but that would have to be something at a wastewater treatment plant level or something along that. It would not be at your house.
Yeah. No.
Okay.
So, can people request that you come and retest their wells, or is there any service, or can they?
You can request. Now, you pay for the testing at the beginning of the wells. We have to charge a fee because we ship everything off to Raleigh. I will say this up front. Everything we do is public record, and we are required to keep those water samples forever. Right now, that's a new state law that passed about 2 years ago. So I always tell people, and I caution, I say, if we come retest it, we're going to have that record forever. And guess who's coming to look at those records now? Realtors, people who sell test kits for people, it's public record. So I tell people, you can have that done privately too, most of those tests. And I tell people, if you don't mind, we'll be happy to do it. There is a fee for it. Some of our fees are very competitive with the private. Some of them are much better than the privates. But our lag time is incredible because I think the state slows it down on purpose because they're not trying to compete directly with the privates. Before I had this job, that's what I did. I did water testing over in Nashville. That was my job. I'm always amazed at how long it takes because I know what it takes to run the test. But I think they do it on – well, I'm not saying it on purpose. I just think they're trying not to compete because if they did it so cheaply – But it is one of the downsides is we keep it forever. So if you ever sell your house, a realtor comes, pulls a sample, and the last one we had was bad, and they get that for their sale, and they produce that at your closing, you've got a bad sample. Because we don't see what happened on the retest. Just keep that in mind. I tell that to everybody.
So you only test the new well?
We'll test any well, but it's required for a new well. And we also
unless someone's having problems?
Some people just haven't tested. Now, if you're on a well that's like a restaurant, a daycare, something that we permit and inspect, and I mentioned that long list, we test those annually.
Yeah.
And there are also, a lot of those are considered public water supply wells. And Public Water Supply is a separate state entity, and they also test those wells. So a good example is the biggest...
But outside the county, private residential homes, they're on their own to test their own water?
I mean, they could do it. Yeah, they're...
I mean, I'm sure they're less prone to have problems than in city limits.
Well, I mean, city limits, we don't have hardly any wells that I know of. There might be an occasional one here or there, but for the most part, we don't have any. But, you know, it's like a lot of things. You have the ability to have your well tested, not just by my department. You have privates who are out there. And, you know, I don't have necessarily – there's some recommendations you could give people. You know, we've had wells that have been contaminated in this county. I'm sure you're all familiar with the Academy Road issue a couple years ago with Dieldrin. And also probably the Lamb's Grocery out where I live, where it had an oil tank that leaked or a gas tank that leaked. I was actually 800 feet from that, and I didn't get city water. Lee knows I'm still upset about that. I can see that, but my well was fine, so my little street didn't have to get city water. Everybody else did. But yes, there are things available, but it's not free because we have to pay for it. The state sometimes, if they think there's an area of contamination like Academy Road, they can get some money and then go in and test. And they've been doing testing of apple orchards around here quite a bit for the last few years.
The private landowners still have to give them permission to come in and use it, to come in and test. So there's not an instance where the county comes in and says we're going to test the residential well.
No. And the other rumor I will say, there's no legislation or serious legislation, and I definitely wouldn't do it, that we're going to put meters on people's wells.
Meters on wells?
Yeah. That'll get you shot.
Yeah.
So that's a rumor sometimes people say that I hear that occasionally. They're going to put, especially during droughts, they're going to start putting meters on wells. No. There's actually a state law that passed last General Assembly that says you have a right to a well on your property. Yeah. Okay.
Out of left field question, is there any kind of preparation for emergencies? Like, we live up on the top of the mountain, and there's a water tank higher than we are, but they need to use a pump to get the water up to the water tank. And I'm sure there are pumps involved, and I believe there's chlorination on site there.
That gentleman right there. When you get to water systems, Lee's going to know much more. I'm assuming you're talking probably Laurel Park.
No, we're at the back end of Kenmure.
Oh, okay. The tank's on top of Kenmure. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Lee can answer all those with, because anything with the water system, that's your expert. And so Lee and I work together quite a bit, and it's always good to do that because we're different. We're doing the same thing, just differently.
That's right.
So, all right, any other questions I can help you with?
Mm-hmm. I'm not being recorded, but that's okay. This sounds like a silly question now that I'm thinking of it, but I don't know if I know the answer. So the majority of big agriculture operations in the county, are they pulling from some, like, would you be servicing a lot of the big ag for irrigation and whatnot, or are they going to be on wells?
Lot of the irrigation right here that I'm familiar with, now I cannot swear this to every occasion, but a lot of the ones I see when they're irrigating, they're pulling from streams.
Okay, so in surface water.
Yeah. So I'm sure there are some that can pull from a well, but we probably don't have the wells that would produce enough to produce for some of these fields. And usually that's going to be your row crops. I don't know many apple orchards that actively irrigate, like some of the tomatoes and the corn and that kind of stuff. But normally when you see them, you'll see the big... they'll see them. There's always a creek, and you'll see the big pipe laying in the creek. That's usually your indication where they're pulling from, the surface water.
So would they be getting, like, a consumption permit from some of the stuff Natalie was talking about with the watershed?
Not from me, not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Unless they pull, I think it's 100,000 gallons a day. Mm-hmm. I don't think they have to.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just wondering.
Yeah. And we only have one well that I know of in the county that meets that 100,000 gallons a day. Anybody want to know where that is?
Say that again?
There's only one well that I know of in the county that meets the 100,000 gallon a day pool. Anybody know where that is?
Sierra Nevada.
Actually, believe it or not, that is the highest producing well that I know of in the county. 300 gallons a minute. 300 gallons a minute. If you can believe that. 300 gallons a minute.
Everybody was up with riparian rights. You couldn't take any water out of the stream unless...
Right, something then.
The thing I noticed in Kenya, they built a dam and are holding back water to have water to water the golf
Mm-hmm.
Can anybody just build a dam and dam up a stream?
That is the Department of the Corps of Engineers.
Okay.
So.
That is no.
Yeah, I would say no.
Yeah.
I used to do that for a living, and you can't, but it would be akin to like giving yourself surgery.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's not real. It's not real easy.
You would have something to do it, but you can block it.
Yeah, I mean,
it's very difficult.
Yeah, the core will. Yeah. Depending on especially where it is, if the streams are trout waters and that kind of stuff, you can just forget it.
It can be done, but usually with the minimal amount of effort, it's the amount you can impact is so small that it doesn't make a big deal.
Yeah.
But
you couldn't build a Lake Summit area.
Grandfather dams around. That's
one thing
that's confusing.
It can be done. Now, I don't mean to say that it can't be permitted. It's just very difficult to do.
Yeah.
Another question that worries me is why aren't we using more hydroelectric power in this area?
Don't have lakes that are big enough.
Uh-huh.
What's the biggest lake in the county?
I'm just thinking about like the waterfalls and.
Yeah. Well, we have to dam them up. Remember, in the 1970s, they were going to put a dam in Mills River and make a gigantic lake for hydro, the TBA, the hydroelectric, and that fought tooth and nail.
Mm-hmm.
But what was Fontana built for? Hydroelectric, and plus also to run Oak Ridge, the nuclear stuff. But that was, but yeah. But if you have
a little waterfall on your property, which we don't, but could you put in a little basin hydroelectric?
Yeah, I saw one the other day doing some septic work. There was a guy that put a small, the little water wheels aren't the best thing. Turbines are the best thing to do. And he put a turbine in. And I actually went and looked at it. And it was actually a neat little thing. And he had taken it off the stream and brought it in, and he could run a turbine off of that. Now, it wasn't generating like a tremendous amount of electricity.
But it was
interesting. I mean, the guy did a great job.
Like run the air conditioning?
I can't remember what he told me it would run. It was more like the lights. You know, anything, air conditioning, what I've always heard, well, I'm more electrician. Yeah. Anything that produces, makes cold, also produces heat, right? And that's the kind of stuff that draws a lot of amps. So it's a lot of people hook stuff like that to lights and stuff that don't draw as much.
We were very popular in Hampton Roads after the hurricane because we had a generator.
Yeah.
We were bringing extension cords over to plug it
in and
save their
freezer. Yeah. All right. We appreciate your time today,
right.
Seth. This has
no
been
problem.
Very
I appreciate
helpful.
Sorry, I went over a little bit.
That's okay.
And if you want to have a good question for Lee, I'd love to hear him answer it sometimes, too, is talk about interbasin transfers. Because you were asking about the transfers in and out, and that's the closest thing I can think of that is interbasin transfers.
You're a troublemaker.
I think that's interesting. We got the continental divide right through here. Come on, let me give you
that's right.
So.
Thank you.
No problem. I'll give you all some of my cards. If you ever have any questions, feel free to give me a call.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm just going to stand back here since I've got the laptop to control this. My name is Lee Smith. I am the utilities director for the for Hendersonville, for the Water and Sewer Department. And we're here to talk about conserving a valuable resource. Let's see if I can... Okay, this is... Well, right now, a couple weeks ago, that's not what this looked like. It had a trickle coming over. This is at the confluence of Big Creek and Fletcher Creek. This actually becomes the North Fork of the Mills River. That's one of our, that was built in 1923. This is our second reservoir up in Pisgah. This is on Bradley Creek, which is a tributary to the South Fork. And believe it or not, but this has, we actually can get more water out of this reservoir than the other is much bigger. We have more storage in the other one, but we actually have a larger pipe running to this one. Total daily flow out of both of these can get up to about 4.5 million gallons. So we're getting roughly 4.5 million gallons a day without pumping. And talking about generating electricity, there's enough elevation change between the reservoir and the water plant that we're looking at putting turbines in line to do two things. One, generate power, but two, take the energy out of the water, because we're having to do that now mechanically, and we're not generating any power as a result.
We're looking to pay for a pump to make the water pressure higher.
That's right. I know. That's right. Yeah, thanks to our topography, which is great, but it's not always great when you're talking about water, or at least drinking water.
So is this just a thought or a plan?
Right now it's just a thought.
Okay.
We haven't been able to find, I know there are people out there that do it. Treatment capacity right now is 12 million gallons a day at our plant. We also have a wastewater plant on site, not a biological but a physical chemical that we treat the water that's wasted through the treatment process. And we have about 60 distribution samples each month. It may be more than that. This is an old slide, or that at least that number's old. It's been more than a couple years. Several years ago, we added two gravity filters. They're not in place. We've got the concrete and steel in place, and we actually built another sedimentation basin. So with permitting, we can go to 15 million gallons a day. That additional flow would have to come out of the French Broad River, which, as you can see, I'll talk about in a minute. And to go to 18 million, we'd build another sedimentation basin, and we'd have six treatment trains, and would not have to do a lot of construction to get to 18. It's probably going to take a whole lot longer to get the permitting, because we would have to do an environmental assessment, which takes a minimum of 6 months.
Where is this happening?
At our water plant. It's out in Mills River.
Oh, can I drive past that?
Yes. Yeah, there's Asheville's. If you're going out towards 280, you'll pass the city of Asheville's plant first, and then ours will be the next one. And we also added automation, or updated a lot of automation, to where we can monitor not only the plant, but we can also monitor our distribution and sewer collection system from the water plant. And we can also control the operations at the plant through the SCADA system, which is supervisory control and data acquisition, is all that means. In the system, we're using radios to communicate back to the plant. Of course, in the plant, we're using a fiber circle or a network. And we also, in 2010, we finished an emergency pipeline to the French Broad River, which is actually larger than the pipelines that we have from the forest right now. It's actually a 30-inch pipe, and can carry up to 18 million gallons a day.
Where's the location of the intake?
The intake is just downstream of the confluence.
Of what?
Mills River and French Broad.
Isn't it the little building that's right there on the bank?
Well, there's no building right now. Supersod has a pump right there.
That's an old waste treatment facility.
Where is
it? Oh, no, you're talking about City of Asheville. There is a building. That's their intake. Mm-hmm. Yeah, ours is just, I think it was 800 feet downstream from that,
okay,
if I remember right. It's on Supersod's property.
Is it impounded at all, the river,
mm-mm,
that location?
No.
So it's just...
We'll do is when we build the intake, we'll build a canal. It'll have a rock vein. It'll sort of direct it into that canal. And we'll put a pump station at the end of that canal. That's already permitted, so we're actually looking at going ahead with that. Based on this drought, we've watching the river levels. Obviously, the French Broad River has a lot more water in it. Even through the 2008 drought, it had a whole lot more water than the Mills River. Water distribution, we've got over 640 miles of line. So you can imagine with 640 miles of line under pressure, you're going to have water loss. We have now 23 people in the distribution and meter services divisions, which are the ones that maintain these lines. We also have a group that maintains our water and sewer pumping facilities, as well as our potable water storage tanks. So we serve roughly 65,000 population. We have probably close to 27,000 connections. Some of the efforts that we're going through now for water conservation, in 2013 we installed 13 basically towers or monopoles. Two of them actually look like towers. The rest of them are just monopoles, look like a big concrete telephone pole that talk to all of our meters in our system. The nice thing about that is it reads every 4 hours. So six times a day we're looking at our meters. And so if there's a problem on the demand side, on the customer side of the meter, we can identify that. We actually are utilizing software right now. Well, it's a software as a service. It's called AquaHawk Alerting. AquaHawk Alerting. You can actually go onto their website and go just find our system, and you can sign up, you know, if you've got your account number and that kind of thing. You can just call our office and ask for Troy. Troy will help you. So you can set up thresholds. You can set it up either monetary, or you can set it up gallon, you know, volumetrically, to alert you daily, monthly, however you want to do it. It'll generate a graph to show you what you've been using over time. And it will also alert you, and we can alert you, even if you're not signed up, we can alert you through AquaHawk, because if we have your contact information, if we have your email address or your cell phone number, we can actually contact you and let you know that you may have a leak. So that hopefully is going to reduce our losses, because now, or before, it could be 45 days before you might realize that you actually have a leak. Now it could be as much as a week or less.
Is this installed for all city water?
It is. It is.
For all 65,000?
Well, that's population. 27,000 customers.
Okay, or so
connections.
All of those.
Yes. Yeah, anybody that has an account with the city, you can sign up.
How does it detect? How does it determine that?
I don't really know. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I know how. It's it goes through the computer. Well,
it meters the flow.
It's looking at your flow, but it actually will learn.
Just looking at past
your habits.
Exactly. And it will, I guess over time, it will start to learn, you know, your flow usage or your water usage patterns. No, that was one question that a lot of people asked when we were implementing this program. They were afraid we were going to be watching them and know when they're there and when they're not there. We have way too much to do that.
Yeah, right.
We got a lot better things to do than to watch what people are using. So I can promise you we're not doing that. We're only catching the anomalies when there's a problem. And it's not a perfect system. You know, we've had actually missed some, but it is a lot better than it used to be. Another thing that we've done is we've added a leak detection technician to our staff. His full-time job is, well, right now his job is leak detection, but he also works with another person that we've just hired, and that is an inflow and infiltration technician. So together, these guys are working together on finding leaks in our water system and finding where water gets into our sewer system, which takes away capacity of our treatment plant, both treatment plants actually. And sometimes it's a water line leaking that gets into the sewer line. A lot of times our sewer crew will find a water leak. So anyway, we've added that position, and we've also created a construction crew. We've identified probably about 15 miles of galvanized, I don't know if you're familiar with galvanized pipe. It's not something you want to have in your water system. A lot of times you have trouble with restriction in the line itself. You may have a 2-inch line with a half inch opening in it. The other side of that is they leak a lot. So anyway, that crew, along with other things, they will be replacing these lines that we've identified.
If plastic bags don't ever go anywhere and we have them forever, do we have PVC pipe forever?
There's not a lot of history on it yet. I mean, they're getting, I don't know, maybe 30 years, 40 years of history. So far, it's been good.
Well, you have to look at the PVC pipe in a different way. It's the better alternative to what we used to use. It's an inert material that doesn't degrade, that sits in the ground and carries water. And it doesn't have the constriction, the stuff that grows in it. It's actually, it lasting a long time is a benefit.
Right. Another thing that we started several years ago is a rebate program. We actually have high-efficiency toilets, high-efficiency clothes washers, as well as smart irrigation systems. We don't have a lot of those. Folks don't do a whole lot of irrigating here like they would on the coast where they have sand for soil, and they need, if they're going to have sod, they got to have an irrigation system. So those are programs. They've been very popular. We have a percentage of the purchase value, and we split that up into 6 equal, not payments, but credits on your water bill.
So I should let you know I have a phone.
When did you get it?
Oh, many years ago.
Oh. Well, if you had gotten it, I think it was 2012. July 2012, I think, is when we started. So if you bought it after that, you're still eligible. And that's all I've got.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Are your pumping stations and such hardened against EMP? The last one that happened in the United States, a solar flaring type thing, killed circuits, only destroyed like telegraph systems and stuff, because it just wasn't that much. But now we have one that would be public.
Well, our SCADA system is, we can do without it. I mean, we ran the system for years and years and years without one.
Without pumping?
So we can, no, not without pumping. Now, when you say EMPs, I guess.
Electromagnetic pulse.
Oh, okay. So
which
this
can
is.
Can also be created by terrorists coming over.
Right. Okay, I got you. No, it's probably. It is protected against people getting onto that system. But as far as those kind of things, probably not. I doubt there are too many systems that are that advanced.
How old is the municipal water system?
Actually, the water system came about in the late 1880s. We had a pipeline from Laurel Park. There was a lake. Oh, it's still over there. It was about a 2-mile watershed and came through that. We still have that pipe in the ground. It's still running water through it. The sewer, believe it or not, until 1963, there were 13 pipes that went right into Mud Creek. Maybe that's where it got its name. But in 1963, we built a treatment plant along with a water plant and took those 13 pipes out of the creek. Mm. So I guess you'd say our sewer system sort of came about. Well, it was still in place in the 20s, but it went to the creek. So in 63 or so, it went to the treatment plant.
And I can tour the water.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yes. Either plant. We're more than happy to, if you want to come out and see the plant, either plant, both plants. They love doing tours.
I've been to both of them. They're both very well run.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Oh, they love kids out there.
Oh, yeah, they love kids.
Oh, yes. Either plant. You can go to either plant anytime. I'm not just saying this because I was really impressed when I got here. You can go to either plant any time of the day or night, and it's spotless. They really take good care of them.
I appreciate that.
Don't see that a lot. Yeah.
Our thanks for that.
Anything.
Yeah. Well, thanks for all this great information today. This has been very insightful.
Certainly.
This was a great meeting.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
So with you dealing with both of these, I'm sorry. Because you deal with a lot of the runoff as well.
Well, it is surface water that gets in. It can either get in through outlets to the surface, or it can get in through cracks in the pipe, which is infiltration. But yeah, we have to deal with those, okay. Like clean outs.
I don't know if it was different from
the Oh, yeah. It's the same water, just getting into a different conveyance system.
You can't put stormwater into it.
No, you can't. That's what we do.
We talked about that a minute ago, and I didn't really bring that up. But it's illegal to connect any kind of stormwater, even at your house, into your sewer system.
And there are what they're called combined systems.
So that's why you have like the holes in the ground that puts all the water in there and lets it naturally just go down. Like the part that's run off because of the oil and stuff.
That just goes into the ground. But we have that get into our sewer systems too. Yeah. Sometimes
the problem is if you put stormwater stream in the sewer system, it overwhelms the treatment plant's capabilities to handle the volume.
Yeah, it takes
water.
Well, he's talking about infiltration inflow. It's pipe seepage into the
pipe. That can happen during flood.
Oh yeah.
Which we may be having to worry about pretty soon.
Normally, where it floods, we have leads that bolt down that don't have holes in them and prevent it in other ways. But you have to bend these pipes to allow, a couple things. You can get some of the fumes out that are fine out in the atmosphere, but they're just not good in a pipeline.
Don't light a match.
So, yeah, exactly. And it also keeps water.
Surcharges and manholes are also in the
service. Good to meet you.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, certainly. Thank y'all.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right, guys, we're welcome Maria. We've got Maria and Evan yet to go. So we're going to try to be, if we can hold our questions until they get done with their presentation, just in the interest of time. And Maria, you have the floor. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. I am Maria Wise with the Mills River Partnership. We are a watershed protection organization, and we work very closely with Lee and the water plant. My office is actually at the water plant. And so we work really closely with the ag community in Mills River, conservation organizations, local government, and citizens. Our mission is to monitor, preserve, protect, and enhance water quality and watershed in Mills River. As you probably gathered, I'll just one more time kind of remind you, the watershed itself is about 50%, 60% at least in Pisgah Forest. So, the rest that's outside of the National Forest is a little bit of more concern for water quality where there's a large agriculture community there. And the farmers there are doing a lot to put in best management practices that I'll talk to you more about in a minute to correct some of those problems. We have a board made up of representatives from all these organizations, and you'll see that it's, a good balance of government and environmental groups and the ag community, and that's kind of by design. We have to have representatives from those organizations to get that balance in our work. We are funded by Hendersonville, Asheville, and a federal 319 grant, and that's kind of administered through DENR. And we work very closely with the Henderson County Soil and Water Conservation District. They actually do a lot of our engineering work and planning on our best management practices. As far as other than the BMPs that we work on, we do a lot of education and outreach, and we're trying to build on that more and more. I'm the only employee and the only staff. So we do now have an AmeriCorps. Yay! and she's doing a lot of the education and outreach. So Mills River Day last year was up in the watershed, and we brought in about 800 people, and at each booth there were, you know, representatives like Riverlink, Mountain True, Carolina Mountain Land Conservancy, as well as the water plant. Various departments from the city and county had booths, but every single booth offered a water quality activity for the attendees to do, to learn about water quality issues. We have these brochures. I'll pass them out.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's just part of the outreach materials that we're starting to produce more and more of. And we're certainly able to do presentations to groups, any other groups in the area that you think would be interested in the work we're doing. We have a great video that I was going to show you, but we're not going to do it. But you can look it up on YouTube, and that really explains. It's a pretty sharply done video discussing the work that we do. And it's a YouTube, just Google it by Mills River Watershed. We do a Kids in the Creek Day with the Rugby Middle School and bring all the 8th graders up to Camp Highlander, which is up in the watershed. And that's, Kids in the Creek programs are just great. They're learning experiences for all ages, really. We are partnering with Sierra Nevada on a foot race. October 31st is Race to the Taps. And I'm looking for volunteers. For being a volunteer, you get a great T-shirt, and you also get beer. So please Google Race to the Taps or call me, and I can sign you up if you want to volunteer. And it's Halloween Day. So, all right, now we're getting into some of the so this is our watershed management plan that was approved just this January. And so this lays out, you can actually, this is on our website. There's a link to it on our website if you want to look into it more in-depthly. And I'll pass around a little bit. But that explains and justifies the work that we're doing there, and outlines some of the issues in the past and some of the reasons, you know, that we're working on these BNP projects. So the BNP projects I am talking about, a good example is like agrochemical mixing facilities that go right in fields or next to fields where farmers do a lot of chemical mixing, pesticide mixing. And so you can see the structure is built above flood level, and it's, you know, well contained if there should there be a spill, and it, you know, either goes to sewer or to a septic system, so it's not going to run off into a stream. You know, good example of a stream that's cut right through a bank, that's probably from straightening of the stream up so that the water really quickly came through that channel and cut down. So, you know, in that situation, we would hire someone, a contractor, to lay back the stream bank, put in the erosion matting, and then live stake the area to get, you know, really good riparian buffer there. And so in situations like this, on farmer streams and farmers' fields, we'll cost share with them at 85%, and we can pay for 85% of that project cost. And so it makes it very, you know, it looks good to them, and most people are really, you know, interested in doing that for because they see that the topsoil that they're losing off their streams, they want to hold it on their property, off their fields. A grassed waterway down here in the right-hand corner is the finished product. So in a big field where you have a lot of runoff, where it comes off quickly from a field, especially where you see maybe plastic culture with tomatoes, it'll pond and pool in one corner, the low area, and then really quickly run off with a lot of sediment into Mills River or a tributary to it. So we put in grass waterways, regrading the area so that it can gradually run into the waterway and filter down before getting into the stream. Riparian enhancement, I think you all get that, kind of more of what I was talking about before. It's a different BNP, but very connected. And then field borders. also similar to the grass waterways, but just on the edges. And that's usually a perennial grass, so it stays there all year. It's not plowed up or tilled up at any time. It stays intact. And all these BNPs that I've just discussed actually have gone in various places in the Mills River watershed. And we're doing some monitoring to, you know, before construction happens, so turbidity sampling before and turbidity sampling after. And I've just been there 3 months, so I haven't done a whole lot of the analysis of this yet, but it's really exciting. I actually just took my first pretty muddy samples last week with that rain, because that's really some of the first rain I've seen since I started. And that's the first time I got really excited, because I saw a difference on, we call the Tillman field, and that was a field that really had some issues a couple of years ago, and it was even linked to a fish kill up there. So since then, several BMPs have gone in on that field, and it was really, the samples were looking really good. I don't know about today. I haven't been today, but we are also doing some rain gauge, rain sampling, and linking the precipitation rates to turbidity samples back at the water plant, because they have all that data there. So it's a great partnership. And there's a picture that you saw earlier. That's the Bradley Branch Reservoir. That's the one piece that we don't do a lot with, like, water savings, our organization, but we're starting to think about ways we can highlight that a little more. And one thing that I do is I talk to Ron Reed, who works for Lee, every day. He's at my office. He's the manager of the plant there. And is that the correct supervisor of the plant there?
Supervisor.
Right, plant there. And he let me go up into the watershed with the plant folks to see where the intake is up there. I think that might even be a water gauge. We went up there right before the first advisory went into effect, the first water conservation advisory, and I think that that gauge in the right-hand corner basically is showing the water's not even reaching the gauge at that point. So very little water that they were able to pull from up there at that time. So what we do, we blast that information out on Facebook, and we talk about it in our board meetings. And you saw that list of board. If everyone at that board meeting shared that information, that would be a lot, you know, of sharing.
Marie, can I add one thing I left out?
Yes.
Talking about the two reservoirs, we actually are not pulling much water. Well, we probably are now, but we were not pulling, as the flow of these two reservoirs goes down, we actually reduce the amount of water we're taking out of those reservoirs. So we could actually end up taking, we keep a little bit of flow through those lines just to keep the sediment from settling in the line. But most of it would come out of the Mills River. Sorry.
Yeah, I was just so fascinated by that, the whole learning about the whole historical system of the water, how water is delivered to us in this county. So it's really fascinating. You know, like Biltmore was involved back when it was first built, so, or Vanderbilt. So just another, you know, just BMP-wise, that those BMPs that I was mentioning, the grass waterways, those do help slow down the runoff of water and actually, you know, helps to give the water more time to percolate into the ground. So that's another water savings piece. And then I'm also looking at a few innovation grants to work with farmers in the community on implementing some really good water conservation irrigation systems. Many are already doing that, but some just don't have the money to invest in that system. So if we could offer some cost share, that could be tens of thousands of gallons saved, you know, easily per year right there. So, and yes, they do mostly pull out of the river with pumps. The ag community. I think that is about all I have. Does anybody have any questions? We're going to be having, we're going to partner with the Wildlife Commission and have a really neat talk in February on the hellbender and the mud puppy. And I'll let you all know about that ahead of time, because we're so lucky to have both of those in the Mills River watershed. want to keep it that way. So.
Thank you. It's great, Maria. I really like how collaborative you guys are with the farming community and everybody else. That's pretty amazing. I'm glad to hear that.
Easy and good bunch to work with.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I love it because everybody benefits in that scenario, right? We all win.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'll send a link to the video to everybody. It probably wouldn't play here because I don't have security permission to do YouTube, but I'll send y'all the link. So,
thank you.
Yeah.
I'm going to run.
Thank you.
All right, so last but not least, we got Evan. He's going to talk to us about water quality.
Okay. I'll try to make this pretty quick. It's been a long meeting. So I'm Evan Parker. I'm the Water Quality Administrator at Mountain True's Southern Regional Office, which is here in Hendersonville, which used to be ECO. Some of you might be familiar. I'm also an AmeriCorps member right now, serving my term. So Mountain True champions resilient forests, clean waters, and healthy communities in western North Carolina. Just going to give you a little bit about what we do in general. So we do a lot of stuff besides water quality. We advocate sensible land use, restore public forests, improve water quality, promote clean energy, and encourage civic engagement. So there's a lot going on. And if you want to know more, you can always go to our website, which is mountaintrue.org. But as for what we do for water quality at this office, we have two water quality monitoring programs. So first is the Volunteer Water Information Network, VWIN. So this is a volunteer-based chemical monitoring program. We sample 33 sites throughout Henderson County. We test for several parameters up there. Mostly nutrients and sediment are the big ones. As you might know, sediment is the number one pollutant for water quality in the region. So we have data covering nearly two decades, and this allows us and partners to identify streams that are facing degradation and hopefully address some of that. We also have annual reports and an interactive map available at mountaintrue.org under our water quality section. So you can, this is available to the public. This information is out there. And we've had some accomplishments with this program. The data was instrumental in giving justification for erosion and sediment ordinance in Henderson County, and also for creating the Mud Creek Restoration Project, which is no longer happening right now, but as from what I understand was did a lot of really good work in the city area on the Mud Creek watershed. Also, our data was used in their watershed manual, I forget what she called it, the MRP's manual that she passed around. So the data is definitely used and is really important. So our second monitoring program is Stream Monitoring Information Exchange, SMIE, and this is a biological monitoring program, and we sample 21 sites throughout the county. Aquatic macroinvertebrates, which is what we're sampling for, so basically aquatic insects. They're really great indicators of water quality because some are more or less sensitive to pollutants. So this gives us another way to look at water quality. And these two programs work in conjunction with each other because this gives you more of a long-term snapshot of what's happening, whereas the chemical is just one time, once per month. So they kind of work together to give you a really good idea of water quality. Again, there's annual reports on this program as well available at mountaintrue.org. And we have an annual training held in March, and we're always recruiting new volunteers. Kim and Mary Beth are both volunteers for this program, actually. So.
And I.
Oh, Jan, that's right.
We got a bunch.
Yeah, we got a bunch here. That's right, yeah. So we also have an Adopt-a-Stream program. So this allows community members basically to adopt section of streams. And they become watchdogs of those streams. They perform usually at least two stream cleanups per year, but more if they'd like to. Some of our teams do more. And they're also watchdogs, so they do regular stream monitoring, basically looking for any changes, anything that might be negatively impacting streams, and then they're able to come to us, and hopefully we can try to address those issues. And teams can be just local, just individuals in the neighborhood. It can be businesses, government, community groups, whatever it may be. I mean, anyone can join us. I mean, we have a lot of Sierra Nevada actually joined the program. Canoga Conferences did. So we have quite a few just variety of teams that have joined the Adopt-a-Stream program. Every year we plan Henderson County Big Sweep, which just happened this September. So it's a countywide stream cleanup event. And all of our Adopt-a-Stream teams usually participate along with other groups and individuals throughout the community. In the past 5 years, volunteers have contributed over 1,400 hours and removed almost 14,000 pounds of trash. and recycling from streams. You would be surprised the kind of stuff they find, all kinds of stuff they pull out of the streams. Okay. And that doesn't include, actually, this year's data, which we're still collecting, which happened earlier this month. We also try to be involved in education and outreach. So both of these programs up here were already just talked about because we worked in conjunction with the Mills River Partnership on this, but we planned the rugby middle school field trip where, again, we educated 300 eighth graders about water quality, which worked really well with the curriculum for eighth grade in this county. Also, we were a big part in planning and participating in Mills River Day, Mount True was. And, you know, we're always looking for, you know, we're open to potential other education activities for youth and adults and other community outreach events. Other opportunities, there's always different stuff going on. So, for instance, this winter we'll be doing live staking throughout Henderson and Buncombe County. So this is a program that we're doing in conjunction with the water quality folks in the Asheville office, which is the headquarters. And it basically, you reduce bank erosion by planting, while everything's in dormancy, certain plants like silky dogwoods or willows. And then once spring comes around, things come out of dormancy, they'll root out and stabilize stream banks, reduce erosion. And then there's other opportunities that may arise throughout the year. It's, you know, there's different things happening. We are thinking about trying to do a storm drain stenciling project probably spring, summer next, you know, 2016. So there's always different opportunities going on. And that's about it. So, I mean, what we do, we, as an organization, do advocacy work as well. But I, as an AmeriCorps member, can't touch any advocacy. But we do a lot of grassroots, on-the-ground environmental work trying to improve conditions. So, I mean, that's pretty much what we do. If you want to keep informed on what's going on, I do a separate water quality newsletter, which goes out electronically, usually about every other month, depending on what's going on. We also have a clean water team that meets on the second Wednesday of every month at our office, which is down on Church and 6th, right downtown. So if anyone wants to get involved and, you know, keep informed on what's going on and what we're up to, I'm going to pass around this. You can just sign on here and let me know if you're interested in learning more and keeping informed on what we have going on.
I don't think I'm on the water quality.
And does anybody have any questions? Well, let's go around.
Is that separate from the normal list you have?
What was that?
Is that separate from the normal list?
Well, you can, that's just a sheet we have. You can, if you want to be on Mount True's, like,
well,
normal
on that
list.
One, I was just, I was
yeah, yeah, so this is a separate one. The water quality newsletter I do is just separate only for Henderson County water quality stuff, so that's why I'm, you can put a note if you want to be on Mount True's.
No, I'm on that one already. I just want to make sure I was saving.
But I was just having this for if you want to be on our water quality newsletter.
That's great. Okay, yeah. Perfect.
So any questions?
Well, I guess my question is kind of bringing forward Phil's question from earlier. I mean, is what we're looking at, and I think it's probably easier for, you know, you and Maria to share, is like, are there, I mean, there's a lot of great work going on, but are there areas areas for improvement, or like, you know, I think about it as like strategic needs or quality needs, like, well, if we put some energy in this area or resources, we could improve this condition, or, you know, maybe in improve the environment for the macroinvertebrates that are,
right,
you know, kind of the foundation of the ecosystems that are in our streams and water sources. I mean, is there anything like that you've seen in your experience?
I mean, it seems like a lot of the problems are, you know, that non-point source pollution, and so it's making these small changes a little bit at a time, spreading awareness, education. So, I mean, like, the Adopt-A-Stream program is a really great program because it spreads that awareness, spreads that education. You have more watchdogs in the stream, so hopefully we can address problems early on. So, I mean, for the most part, it's just trying to get this word out there on these programs that exist.
Yeah.
Get it out there. We also do advocacy work, so I mean, that's a little separate from what I would do, but if there is something that we want to, there could be some collaboration if there's something we want to change as far as with the county commissioners. Again, that probably, I wouldn't be involved with that so much because I'm an AmeriCorps member and
right,
can't do that. But
sure.
So that is that potential. I mean, unlike Natalie, we're a nonprofit. We can, if we want to, we can, you know.
Have opinions.
Yeah, exactly. We don't have to be as, I mean, we want to be smart and we want to be common sense about things, but we can be a little bit more, you know, upfront about stuff if we want to be.
Yeah. And I guess a kind of a follow up to that, Evan, is there, so you know, with the adopt a stream and you have watchdogs, I mean, are there any streams that you guys are seeing degradation over, you know, like in the historical data, like, wow, there must be a problem in, you know, this tributary or Mud Creek or, you know, wherever?
Yeah, I mean, Mud Creek is really bad, but that's just what you're going to expect when it runs through the city like this.
Right.
It is hard to address these problems because it's that non-point source pollution, really. But we are trying to develop, like, for instance, we're trying to develop a relationship with certain farmers. So Three Hours Farm, Welshealy, which is more upstream Mud Creek. We're trying to, you know, make these relationships, connect them with soil and water conservation districts so that they can try to improve it. As far as, you know, it's hard. We try to address it a little bit at a time. Some of the other creeks there are impacted. Mill Pond Creek, which that's coming from the old landfill, so that's tough. But I think they're doing some sort of remediation project there. You know, a lot of the water is pretty good, though. Like, Mills River is a pretty clean stream. And then, you know, like, we're just trying to knock away at it a little at a time. The French Broad River is actually better, I think, than some people perceive. The French Broad isn't actually that bad, but, you know, going out there doing these live staking events, and we might do live staking on Mud Creek and other smaller streams, just making these little grassroots just improvements at a time.
All right. Anybody else have any questions?
But if there's anything else, feel free to give me a call. Our number is on the website, just mountaintrue.org, or if there's anything we want to collaborate on with or anything, how we can help as a nonprofit in the area, definitely feel free to contact me.
You said the reports are online.
Yes.
So if there was specific data for, you know, specific stream and stuff that you wanted to look into, you can get to it.
Absolutely. Right now, right now we're a little behind. We don't have all the reports online. Right now, we just have the most recent, but we have a new report which is combined 2013-2014 report. It's supposed to be coming out in October this month, so we should have the most recent report. And I also, the annual reports, they're usually at least a year behind. They come out a lot later because they have to compile all this, and they have a lot of great information. But if you want more up-to-date information, I get the monthly data pretty much every month because it is once a month testing. Same for the SMIE program, that's twice a year, but I get that data pretty much right away. So if you do need any of that data right away, I can send that to you, and then you can look at things a little more detailed.
Sounds great. Mm-hmm. All right. We appreciate your time today, Evan.
No problem at all.
Yeah. Been great.
Awesome. Where's the board?
Right here.
Thanks again, Lee.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Are we adjourned?
Well, we got to have just a quick conversation, I think, because one of our intentions for today was to gain insight so we could start planning for what we want to work on this year. And I think being humans, that was a lot to digest. And so the other thing I kind of, somewhat juxtapositioned in this is, it's certainly possible that there's something in water. There's nothing in water conservation that we feel like we can impact and make, you know, conscientious and actionable recommendations to the commissioners. So it may benefit this committee to hear from some folks, like maybe John Mitchell in planning or Parks and Rec, about maybe green infrastructures where we can make some headway.
Sounds like they've got it under control.
Yeah, the water people too.
Yeah.
Can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
And
sure.
Natalie hinted at this. If you want to know, like with stormwater, for instance, and mm-hmm. erosion control, what the issues are, who you need to be talking to or who we need to be talking to is the private civil engineers that are
right.
doing these projects. Because these are the guys that are doing, they're trying to work these rules and make them fit on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And they do it for a living. So
right.
they're not, I mean, you know, they'll tell you what they think.
Right, makes sense.
And she alluded at that, but I don't know that it really came out.
Yeah, I heard that comment too.
She's
restricted on what she can or can't say necessarily.
To that end, I would also suggest a couple of years ago, the commissioners had kind of appointed this thing called the Regulatory Review Committee, and several heads of different organizations that would be regularly implementing and having to get permits and all these things approved by the county were invited to come and speak to this committee, basically saying, you know, I am totally burdened by this regulation that you have on the books. Let's talk about changing it. So a couple years ago, the commissioners did go through that process. Since then, several of these, long wait periods with permitting and different things those recommendations were made to the commissioners, and the commissioners did make some changes. So, you know, a lot of that would have been the fee structures, the wait times on certain things, maybe not necessarily things that were impacting quality of water immediately, but like the Home Builders Association was there. There were several engineers were there. I was the director of ECO at that point. I was there, you know, so there was a variety of the community there. But I'm sure we can pull up some of those recommendations from that committee if that would help you. I can try and get a hold of those.
I would like to see those.
Okay.
It'd be interesting to know what hasn't been addressed.
Okay. And a lot of that, a lot of those recommendations that came out of the Regulatory Review Committee, I think that's what they were called, probably would have gone to a group like this of appointed citizens and the staff resource, and some of those things would have been vetted. So it was a very long process. And then those recommendations would have been made to the commissioners, who would then vote yay or nay, whether or not those committees said we do or don't recommend these different things. But I can try and put my hands on those if that would be helpful for you.
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
I think it would. And kind of related to that, so we, one of the things we talked about at the last meeting is our frequency of meetings. Like, you know, some of us had said, well, we feel like if we get energized about something this month and then it's 2 months until we meet again, that you can lose momentum and, you know, you can't really get a whole lot done in a 12-month period. So being that we're trying to digest a lot and really focus what the EAC is going to work on, do we feel comfortable, waiting 60 days, or do we want to meet again in 30 days to kind of bring together what we've got and see that if we've got something we can focus on, or if we should invite more folks to speak with us? What are y'all thinking about that? Because another thing I would say is, I think if we can, in my own modest opinion, if we meet monthly, we can really hold our meetings to an hour, which I think for most of us would probably be a better scenario.
We might help me remember I have a meeting.
Yeah.
We usually do pretty good.
Right. So what do y'all think about that? What's your sense of the frequency?
We plan to have a whole other slew of 4 to 5 people coming for the December meeting,
mm-hmm.
which, like you're suggesting, doesn't give you any time to process
right.
what you learned today. So
right.
you definitely could have another meeting if you would like. You would need to vote on it today so I can make sure the clerk has enough time to publish the notice of the meeting.
Right.
I don't know any difference, so it's fine.
I agree that there should be a meeting every month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it would help you remember when the meeting was, too.
Right.
Well, it made it hard when we were doing the B-City stuff because it was like, hold on, we got to, like, get back up to where we was because we were done 3, 4, 5 weeks ago.
Yeah.
With it, so.
Okay. So do you want to have a vote on a meeting in 30 days? Is everybody in favor of that?
Yes.
All right. I like it. It's like what motion carries. So Rachel will check in with the make sure that.
Do you want to still do the first Thursday at 3 o'clock?
I suppose if it's open,
okay.
unless there's a conflict, we can
I'll
go from there.
Okay.
Yeah, that sounds good. I appreciate everyone's energy and attention with this kind of stuff because it's not easy to find something when you're not really sure what you're looking for yet. So yeah, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn after a long meeting. No, if anybody wants to serve it up, Pam, I think I heard you earlier say.
I make a motion to adjourn. What's the date for the next meeting?
If it would be the first Monday or first Thursday, excuse me.
She's gonna check for conflicts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll wait to hear from Rachel as far as confirmation, but it looks like it'd be the 5th.
Yeah.
Yeah. 5th of November. All right, sounds good. Thanks again, everybody.
Thanks.
Yeah.
One of our commissioners is a civil engineer, or was.
Right.
Sort of still is.
That's Bill, isn't it?
Yeah.
Bill Absalom, yeah, I used to work for him. He's weighed in on these things, and he's.
I'm sure that's part of the reason he is a commissioner, is because he wanted to see some change in the stuff he had to deal with.